Are you an accredited investor looking for a new opportunity to generate passive income and build the retirement of your dreams? Then elevate your investment game with Viking Capital, where wealth meets wisdom. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting out, Viking Capital can help guide you towards financial freedom through passive real estate investing. With strong and transparent underwriting, Viking identifies low-risk opportunities with the goal of preserving investor capital and maximizing long-term growth potential. And their accessible and responsive investor relations team will help you understand how each investment will impact your unique financial goals. With $800 million in assets acquired, more than $230 million in equity raised, and more than 5,000 units under management, Viking Capital is your path to early retirement. To learn about Viking Capital's latest investment opportunity, which is available for you right now, visit go.vikingcapllc.com/best. That's go.vikingcapllc.com/best to get started today. Did you know that within a decade, women will hold $30 trillion in investable assets? Yet somehow, only 19% of women reported feeling confident in selecting investments that align with their long-term goals. Our friends at InvestHer are out to change that. InvestHerCon is the number one premier conference for women in real estate, and it's happening June 2nd through the 4th in Austin, Texas. InvestHerCon is not just another real estate conference. It's a transformational experience focused on real estate investing, business strategies, and self-care tactics, all designed to help women take control of their financial futures. Gain the knowledge and skills you need to grow your portfolio and build a sustainable business, all while connecting with over 500 women who are playing at the same level. To learn more and to get your tickets, visit InvestHerCon.com today and use the code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. That's InvestHer, HERCon.com, promo code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. Quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities or to make or consider any investment or course of action. For more information, go to bestevershow.com.
In advance of acquisition, the necessary component for you as the buyer is understanding the expense and the timeline that you have to accomplish that experience.
Welcome to the Best Ever Show, the world's longest running daily commercial real estate podcast. Our hosts interview commercial real estate experts every day to get you the best advice ever with none of the fluffy stuff.
Welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever Show. I'm Slocum Reed, and this is our due diligence mini series where we focus on the processes that commercial real estate investors go through prior to the acquisition of a property to make sure that it is what we think it is and that it will perform the way that we think it will perform once we send in our money and we finally own it. Today, we are joined by John Wilhoit, who is joining us from Kensington, Maryland. He is the Vice President for Asset Management for the Housing Opportunities Commission of Montgomery County. He focuses on multifamily asset management and affordable housing, and the commission currently owns almost 10,000 units of multifamily within Montgomery County. John, our topic for today is the capital expenditure process in advance of an acquisition during due diligence. Let me say first, before you start, JW was actually one of the first guests on this podcast in January of 2015, over 3,000 episodes ago. That was episode 140, titled, How Much Do Multifamily Asset Managers Get Paid? If you want to go back 9 years into the history of this podcast, you can listen to JW and Joe Fairless have that conversation. Now that I've introed you that way, JW, let's get into it. Capital expenditure process in advance of an acquisition.
Yes, 9 years ago was before Slocum had gray hair, but we're in later year now.
That's mostly true. mostly true.
So let's talk about due diligence. So there's multiple phases, right? There's all kinds of ways we can slice and dice it. But the real deal is you have to do your due diligence in advance of an acquisition. And it's more than just looking at the numbers. So with respect to property capital needs, that's really diving into the building and its systems. So what is a capital need? A capital need generally refers to any item that has a lifespan of longer than 5 years. So on the small end, that would be a water heater. On the long end, that would be doors and windows. But everything wears out. Roofs wear out. Doors and windows wear out. Flooring wears out. But all of those things, generally speaking, have an expected lifespan of more than 5 years. So when you walk into any door, you really don't see much. You see walls and windows and flooring. But when you open those closets, you see electrical systems. When you go in that basement, if there's a basement, you see plumbing lines in addition to water heaters. So there's all these items within a structure, within a development, even within a specific unit, that have a lifespan beyond 5 years that are part of your investment making decision. Because some buildings are well maintained, others are not, of course, and then there's everything in between. So with respect to capital needs, you're looking for what is my cost to not necessarily repair, but what is my cost to replace these items that have a limited lifespan? And when you have a home inspection done, they give you a general idea of the time remaining or the useful life of these particular items, the doors, the windows, the water heaters, light fixtures. Much as light fixtures can work for an extended period of time, even the switches themselves have to be changed out after a while. Otherwise, they stop working. So it can be a very small item, but in aggregate, these items add up. And let's just say, what size building would you like to talk about, Slocum? Give me a size and an age.
Yeah, let's go with a complicated age.
Okay.
Let's say 1968.
All right.
Get ourselves the potential for galvanized steel plumbing and aluminum wiring.
Thanks for that.
fun Vietnam War economy kind of construction materials. And I was telling you before that we're based in Cincinnati. So we're going to go with a very Cincinnati property. We're going to call it a 48 unit, but it's actually four separate 12 unit structures.
Very good.
With okay. boiler heat.
And let's assume that it's the original owner that's owned the stuff since 1975. So this particular ownership group, they only have an interest in cash flow. They don't repair anything. They don't even cut the grass. They don't do anything. So if they've owned it since 1975 and they're not doing much, maybe they've added a roof. But if I know this ownership group, they didn't take off the prior roof. They just put one over the top. So you've got that to deal with. The windows and doors are likely leaking. Maybe the frames are a little bit crooked. So there's air
everywhere.
And they're
likely casement single pane windows. Yes.
Very likely. So the floors are creaking. The windows are stretched and shuttering every time there's a small breeze. So there's a lot of work to do. And you can't presume that what you find in one building will be exactly the same as its sister building, because on Earth, the air blows in a certain direction, and those buildings that get more exposure to wind likely have a different outcome than those buildings that have more protection from wind. Water is always bad, but even on this small plot that has 48 units, there's likely one building that's gotten more exposure to water, whether it's runoff, whether it's just based on placement because of it's closer to the sidewalk or it's closer to the driveway. So you have to look at each individual building by itself. That's my message to you, even with respect to a 48 unit property with four buildings. So let's look at building number one. So we have windows, doors, floors, wall coverings, plumbing fixtures, light fixtures, roofing systems, and then aggregate plumbing and aggregate electrical. So if a PC&A specialist is going in there, property capital needs assessment, someone who focuses on capital needs assessments, they're going to give you a report that's anywhere from 12 to 24 pages. It's going to tell you all the stuff you already know. And then the very last page of that report is going to tell you the real deal. And the real deal is, what do I have to spend over the next 20 years for this property to operate? And it gives you that suggested expense over the course of that 20 years. Usually you'll see the majority of the expense after year three or after year five, because they don't want you to think they want you to spend all your money today. But in the course of this mid-century building, can we say mid-century, 1968? Close enough. Last century building, the two things that are going to stand out are going to be the plumbing and electrical, and there's nothing you can do about it unless you're going to replace it. There's really no upgrades to that.
I will say, I'm thinking about a property that I close on this week, well before this episode airs. It's a bit older than this, but it has old clay sewer drain lines that have separated, and you can tell that it was installed in 3-foot sections because every 3 feet you find root balls growing into the line. So we're able to get it jetted, and then we have one quote for adding a sewer liner instead of excavating and replacing the entire sewer lines. But that's another fun one. I don't know if clay was still being used in the 60s, but it was being used in the 40s when this one was built.
It definitely was, and there's probably more properties than you would believe that have that lining, because they're only going 50 feet to the main sewer line, and digging up that 50 feet could be $50,000.
Per sewer line.
Yeah, so.
And this property has 2 main sewer lines.
Question is, what price glory, right? How far to get to the main? So I've seen existing sewer lines remain in place and be replaced in another location because it's easier to dig where there's no other utilities and nothing to do with the existing sewer. So it's redirected back to the main through another direction. So there's all kinds of ways to skin that cat, right? But if it's a 1968 building, I'm going to stay above ground for a minute. Then the electrical and plumbing systems are likely original, and there's no way to replace them eloquently. You just have to make a determination on how long you're going to own the building and how much you want to spend to gain additional useful life out of those systems. So sometimes that's a educated guess and not nothing more, right? Well, nothing's went wrong recently, so we're good. But who wants to dig out of walls galvanized pipe? There's just no easy way to do that. So in that instance, I would make sure to clean every pipe in that building. That'd be probably one of the first things I did after ownership, is clean out every single last one of those pipes and make sure they were all working functionally. Doesn't mean you can't put a camera in there in advance of your acquisition, since we're talking about due diligence, but you're certainly not going to spend any money like that before you own it.
So given the direction this conversation is headed, JW, with talking about these major capital needs and these systems within the property that, for tax purposes at least, are intended to last longer than 5 years.
Yes.
Before I begin, let me say that we're not likely to talk about anything that was built in the 1990s or after, because in this conversation, those properties are simply too boring for us, because everything is too well constructed and the codes then were too close to what we have currently to have these kinds of issues. And even after 1978, a lot changed. A lot of us are familiar with the lead paint, but a lot of building code changed in 78. So we're looking at these pre-1978 properties in Cincinnati, and in Maryland, I'm sure we could look at pre-1878 properties as well, although none of those mechanical systems are original nowadays.
Yeah.
Let me put a framework around the rest of this conversation, JW. So the first thing that we need to do within our due diligence period, while we have the protections allowed in our contract for the due diligence period, we need to determine any major condition issues that we currently have with our major mechanical systems, including things like doors and windows and roof. We also need to determine the remaining useful life of those mechanical systems.
Yes.
While everything is working fine for the moment, for how much longer can we anticipate that everything will continue to work fine?
Correct.
That is something that we as apartment investors are going to hire an expert to analyze for us. I'm not the one to determine how much corrosion there is inside a galvanized steel pipe.
Yeah.
So having received those reports, JW, what I'd like to ask next is, we're talking about pipes and wires inside walls and floors throughout multi-story buildings here. We're talking about sewer lines below grade. When we get into boiler systems, where again, we're talking about mainly pipes moving throughout the building, these are very expensive things to replace. Not only tedious, but you have to factor in that you're not just replacing the pipes and the wires, there's also demo involved, and then you're having to do the carpentry, the drywall, the painting, to rebuild those areas that you opened, the new flooring, hopefully the new ceilings, because that's faster and more affordable than new flooring, but all of those things have to be closed back up and have to look pretty again afterwards. I say all of that, JW, to ask, with these major mechanical systems, give us the cheat codes. Where is it that you've seen apartment operators succeed in maintaining these systems that are effectively functionally obsolescent by code, instead of just going in, opening everything up, ripping everything out, installing everything new, and closing it back up again.
Okay, so this is the time to start writing stuff down. So that was a good keyword, the cheat codes. So the cheat codes include paving the parking lot, if that's part of it, because that is another one of those items that has a lifespan more than 5 years, and a condition that comes with the property when you purchase it. So something you need to know about in advance in your due diligence. So the cheat code is this: in advance of acquisition, the necessary component for you as the buyer is understanding the expense and the timeline that you have to accomplish that expense. So you buy a building for $5 million. It requires $1 million in CapEx, and you know this up front. The value is $5 million. You're likely not going to spend $5 million on the property. You're likely going to try to negotiate a discount that includes the CapEx that's necessary to bring the property up to speed. So generally speaking, sellers don't discount their property 20% regardless of the condition, right? Let's say that you end up actually buying the property for $4.2 million. You're not going to get the whole million that your PCNA says that it needs, but you're going to get something. And that's an optimistic number, but I'm being optimistic at the moment. So that being said, you're likely going to get a loan for the acquisition price plus some of the CapEx. And the reason I say some is because all of the capital expenditures that have been identified in the PCNA, in the property capital needs assessment, do not need to be accomplished all at one time. So that cheat sheet part is this: when you match the capital needs to your term of ownership expectation, that tells you how fast you need to spend money. So for example, on day one, everything that's health and safety must be addressed. You can't mess around with health and safety. That is number one priority. You have to protect your residents because they are your customers who help you operate your business successfully. So once health and safety is out, the next question is, how long do I need to take to implement the remaining CapEx? So if you have four roofs like we were using in our prior example, you're not necessarily going to accomplish all four roofs in year one of ownership. Their condition, there may be one roof that has a 2-year remaining life, another that has a 5, and the ones on the back end that have been protected from wind and rain, more wind, hard to protect from rain, they've got 10 years remaining. So now you know you've got $150,000 in roofing, but only $75,000 to spend within the next 5 years. The rest can be deferred another 5 years out after that, 10 years out. So that discount you garnered on the front end with respect to your acquisition based on CapEx can now be parlayed with your ownership position and term of ownership or expectations, but you also have time to build your capital reserves over time as you own the asset. So as Slocum was saying earlier, you can't necessarily open up every wall and deal with galvanized pipes. Who's going to do that? But there are other instances where you're going to want to do those major repairs. The cheat sheet part is this: you have time to accomplish it, because it doesn't have to all be done at once. And you have time not only at the front end to perhaps put in, let's say, a chunk of capital needs investment, $200,000 as an example, on our purchase price of $4.2 million. But if it's 5 years or 10 years until that roof is needed, then you have that time to add to your capital reserves so that when the time does come to replace that roof, you're not having to take it out of cash flow.
We'll get back to the show, but first, some sponsors I'm confident you'll find value in learning more about. If you're an investor like me, you're probably looking for one platform to manage the banking and finance needs of your entire portfolio. The good news is, there is one. It's called Baselane, and it's the number one banking platform built for independent real estate investors that reduces busy work so you can focus on growing your business. With Baselane, you can earn up to a 4.19% annual percentage yield and 5% cash back on debit card spending with no monthly fees. With a simplified view of your cash flow and expenses, you can retire those tedious spreadsheets. You can also manage unlimited virtual accounts and cards, and even open separate accounts for each property or unit. Join more than 40,000 real estate investors who trust Baselane for their banking, property management, and bookkeeping. Head over to baselane.com/Joe and sign up today for a chance to win a $500 Amazon gift card. That's baselane.com/Joe.
So the first really helpful point here JW, is that we need to compare the remaining useful life of each of the major components of the property with our intended hold period and plan accordingly. For example, a roof that has 10 years left on it or 15, and we have a 5 to 7 year hold period, we don't necessarily need to plan to address that roof. But in our 1968 412 plex example, the roofs with a remaining life of fewer than 7 years will likely need to be addressed, and we need to budget accordingly for that.
Yes.
Tell me if I'm too far into the weeds here, JW, but speaking to these mechanical components, what I'd like to do, in part in the interest of time, is to list some, we'll continue to call them cheat codes, for major mechanical systems that I'm thinking of, and how older systems that are no longer be installed new per code requirements can be maintained instead of replaced to save money. Now, I think you had mentioned something about cleaning out drain plumbing with galvanized steel. I've never seen that. We've always just replaced it. The issue with cast iron drain lines is when they break, that's very difficult to just fix as well. So I don't know about the cheat codes there, but we already talked about getting a sewer liner instead of replacing a broken or a clay sewer line. Again, I'm not necessarily advocating for all of these cheat codes. I'm just putting all of them in front of you, JW, so that you can respond to them. I know that in the example of aluminum electrical wiring, that you can make sure your fixtures, not just your light fixtures, but also your power outlets, your breakers, assuming you have a breaker panel and not a fuse box, you can make sure that they are all rated for aluminum so that you don't have actual risk of increased fire. You do have the ability with asphalt shingle roofs to lay multiple layers of shingle on top of one another up to a certain limit. I'll let you quote that. So that if the only issue with your roof is that the shingles are worn out, you don't have to do a total tear off or do anything with the decking underneath. You can just go right over top. And, you know, I'm thinking through windows and doors. And on a case-by-case basis, at least in our experience, replacing them has been fairly affordable. Also, when it comes to windows and doors and other insulation, especially if you're paying for heat in a place like Maryland or Ohio, there can be some significant utility cost savings to doing those things as well. Is there anything I'm saying right now that you disagree with or anything that you would want to add?
Back to health and safety, which is always paramount. If we're dealing with that 1968 building, I'm probably changing out the breaker boxes. I would absolutely eliminate anything with fuses. It would have to be rated for aluminum use. And I just think that's prudent to accomplish, even if you're only doing one unit at a time, one unit a month, one unit a year, just making progress on that to get those gone. Because one of the things that we haven't really touched on, but it's definitely valiantly affected by our capital needs deployment, is insurance cost. So as you're accomplishing these items, you're going to want to make sure that your insurance broker is aware of these upgrades that you're making, because it will have a positive effect on your rates. And then when we're talking about windows and doors, East Coast is different from West Coast, that's different from Hawaii. So you're not necessarily doing the same quality or thickness or rating in a colder environment as you'll do in a warmer environment. And with respect to replacing windows and doors, they can be accomplished pretty reasonable when you get the right contractor. When you get the right guys doing the work and they're running through a building, they'll be in and out of there pretty quick. And then it's just a matter of what kind of volume can you buy your material. If you're only buying one window and one door, it's going to be whatever you can get. But if you're buying for 12 units at one time, having them all installed the same day that they're delivered, start installation the same day they're delivered, then you make it a reasonable price point. And again, even if you need all windows and all doors for all four of those buildings, you may just do one building a year. Now, even if you have the money to do so, I'm saying you may only do one building a year because things change over time. What happens if you have a variable rate loan and things change? You need cash on hand. You're not going to have cash if you put it all in the building and now you can't afford your mortgage payment. That was not a wise investment. So watching your capital, making sure your cash flow is paramount to your operations, keeping your residents safe, We talk about the building, but outside of the building, but yet still attached to it, we have asphalt, we have concrete. Sometimes concrete needs to be replaced. If there's chipped concrete, it needs to be removed and or replaced. There's also decks or decking. Those need to be properly secured and inspected and maintained. That's also a capital needs item. So all of these things beyond just the roofs, doors, and windows that touch the building that have a long or an extended life are part of your capital needs planning. But again, because they don't all have to be accomplished all at the same time, outside of health and safety, first and paramount, then you can plan your CapEx according to your PCNA, according to your intended ownership, and based on your expected outcomes. And what I mean by that is some people are not in the game for cash flow. They're just not in the game for that, right? They want tax benefits. They have other reasons for buying the acquisition other than cash flow. Maybe that ownership group is putting every single last dollar of free cash flow back into the building for its longevity because they never intend to sell. That's a different perspective than the one we used earlier, where we say, well, we bought it, we plan to keep it 5 years, and that would be a long time for us. That's a different game plan on CapEx versus the ownership group that says, when we buy something, we never sell. That would be my dad. Anything he buys, he's never selling. It could happen, but it's just not part of his mindset. And he's 85, by the way. He's not selling.
That's awesome. And that makes a lot of sense. John, you've given a lot of excellent advice here when it comes to evaluating capital needs, capital expenditures during the due diligence period. Where can people get in touch with you?
I am an author. If you look me up on Google or Amazon, you'll see that I have books related to rent roll analysis. My website is johnwilhoit.com, and there you'll find a good handful of articles and other things that are related to not only CapEx, but property management and real estate ownership. It's a good place to do search. If you have a particular topic, there is a search column there. If I've spoken about it or written about it, it'll bring it up in the search, and you can learn more there at johnwilhoit.com.
Awesome. That link is in the show notes. JW, thank you. Best ever listeners, thank you as well for tuning in. If you've gained value from this conversation in our due diligence series about capital expenditures and analyzing them, budgeting for them in advance of acquisitions, please do subscribe to our show. Leave us a 5-star review and share this episode with a friend so that we can add value to them as well. Thank you and have a best ever day.
Hi, best ever listeners. Joe Fairless here again. And one last thing before you go, would you like to receive a short weekly email with proven tips from experienced investors, free tools and resources, and a roundup of the week's most relevant news and best ever content? Well, if so, join the community of nearly 15,000 commercial real estate passive and active investors who receive the best ever newsletter. Just go to bestevercre.com/access and you'll get the very next one. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And as always, thank you for listening and have a best ever day.